Part 12, Return and Joining BOAC.
At last we had a visit from a group of American journalists who were very sympathetic and promised to report our situation to London and Washington. A few days later we were thrilled to see a convoy of about 40 American trucks drive into the camp. We all gathered up what little belongings we had and clambered onto the trucks. But just as we were about to drive off, a posse of Russians arrived, armed with machine guns, and ordered us all off, and what's more, told the drivers they would all be stopped a couple of miles down the road, and if any of us were found on board, the whole convoy would be interned. As you can imagine, this did absolutely nothing to improve our morale. We were, by now, down to bare food rations, and felt worse off than under the Germans. Time wore on to the end of May. Quite a few decided to make a run for it and try to get to the River Elbe, hoping to get across somehow. One of these was Jim, our bomb aimer, who got through all right and on getting to England was able to tell Mum that I was okay. At last the Russians told us we were to be released, but they would only let us leave the camp when they were satisfied that the requisite number of their POWs were actually at the exchange point. We were taken by the Russians to the Elbe, where the Yanks took us, after a lot of dithering, to a base they had in Hull. We stopped there for the night and some decent food, and then we were put on DC-3s, Dakotas, and flown to Brussels. On arrival there, we were offered a choice of enjoying the flesh pots of the city or, if we didn't mind the discomfort, of going back to the UK on a couple of RAF Lancasters. Needless to say, I took the latter option.
We landed at Cosford, not far from Wolverhampton, and were greeted by W, VS and Salvation Army ladies who welcomed us as if we were the first POWs to return, rather than almost the last. And how nice it was to get a real cup of English tea. Cosford was the reception centre for returning POWs, and we spent a couple of days there, going through the various formalities and being kitted out with new uniforms, etc. We were then sent home on 6 weeks' rehabilitation leave, and as some of the chaps had been POWs for 4 years or more, they had a lot of catching up to do, and for me, it was just as welcome. We got to Euston on a special train, but because it was the Whitsun spring bank holiday, the first peacetime holiday for 6 years, at Waterloo there was a lengthy queue for the Bournemouth train. A porter, do you remember them, seeing our brand new uniforms and kit bags, asked whether we were returning POWs. He said, come with me, and took us past everybody and into a first-class compartment and put reserve notices on the other seats. I'd phoned home from Waterloo, and although few people were able to run a car, one of the neighbours was waiting at Bournemouth Station for me. In Chigwell Road, there was a huge banner across the road saying, Welcome home, Gordon, and flags and bunting out all along the road. Practically everyone seemed to be out at their gate. And when we got to number 17, there was a welcoming party of relations and friends. I was so overwhelmed by all this that I can't remember much, except that I was welcomed home in a right royal fashion.
The 6 weeks' leave was fortunately during the summer, so I was able to relax and get out quite a bit. I also looked up Betty, who was in tears at seeing me again. She was as passionate as ever and took me to stay for a few days at her parents' house in Harrow. I was in a quandary about this relationship. She obviously loved me dearly, but I couldn't feel the same about her. She was fun to be with, and she roused my sexual feelings for the first time, though we still didn't go all the way. However, I was seeing more of Doreen at home and my feelings were growing in that direction, so I felt that I had regretfully to break it off with Betty. I still had a year or more to serve and I was asked my preference from a list of options. I chose secondment to BOAC or Transport Command, but there was a shortage of instructors, so that's what I had to do. I had to go to Shawbury, the RAF University, but as it was full, 15 of us were given a couple of chaps who had just completed the Shawbury course to prepare us for what was to come. The whole thing was quite informal. were only accountable to our instructors. After a few weeks, the station we were attached to was shut down. We were sent home on leave for a few days while it was decided what to do with us. I was beginning to see more of Doreen, and I decided to extend my leave by an extra day. Nobody apart from our little bunch would know, and it was a Saturday anyway. However, when I returned to camp, there was a call to see the station CO. On my day AWOL, there had been a call from the Air Ministry to attend a meeting in London that week. I was torn off a strip for this, but why did the Air Ministry want me? When I got there, I was told that someone on our crew had given away more than they should have. They had obtained this information from the Germans in the interrogations at Durlag Luft. Luckily, I managed to convince them that it wasn't me.
After being posted to a couple of stations, which promptly closed down, we were sent to Jerby in the Isle of Man, which was the number one air navigation school for the RAF. By this stage, we'd been taught as much as our instructors could impart, and we just had a good jolly and spent most of the time in Douglas and the surrounding area, which was quite enjoyable. We were sent home on leave again, by which time Doreen and I had really been getting together, and in fact we even had a holiday in London together, staying at her aunt's place. We were getting very close, and one evening in February we went out to Highcliffe. It was a beautiful evening with a nice sunset, and I proposed to her, and needless to say, she said yes. The next thing was buying the ring, and then starting the arrangements for the wedding. We decided that we would leave it until October to give time to get things ready. Her mother was going to make the wedding dress out of, would you believe, Air Force parachute nylon and lace. She made a very good job of it. Eventually, I went to Shawbury for about 6 weeks, but in that time they pumped everything possible into us as far as navigation was concerned. Compasses, magnetics, astral navigation, everything you could think of, with an exam at the end of it, which I passed reasonably well. So I was promoted to flight lieutenant, which was very handy as it meant a little more money. I had to decide my future career. I could stay in the Air Force on an extended commission for 2 years, or a permanent one for 15 years. I didn't want a permanent commission, but thought the 2 year one might be okay if nothing better turned up. However, the RAF hadn't chosen to second me to BOAC, which was what I really wanted to do. At that time, my mother had the chief navigator from BOAC at Herne billeted with her. When I was home on leave, we had a long chat, and he said they really needed more navigators on the long-haul routes based at Herne, and I should apply. I wrote off to BOAC, presented my CV, and said I'd like to join them. I hadn't heard anything by the time I went to Shawbury, so after the course, I was posted back to the Isle of Man as an instructor.
I was only in Jerby about 3 months when it closed, and the whole air navigation school was transferred to Topcliffe in Yorkshire. The move was a bit exciting, trying to get everything set up at the new place, but we did. After almost giving up, I finally heard from BOAC, who asked me to come for an interview in London. I knew they only wanted a certain number of navigators, and I was sure that a lot of ex-RAF navigators were looking for jobs, and some had been in Transport Command, which was much more like BOAC-type flying. The interview went quite well, but I didn't hear anything for a bit. This was just before the wedding on October the 12th, so we'd no sooner got sorted at Topcliffe than I had to leave to get home to get married. That was the next exciting chapter in my life. Naturally, not having been around myself, I hadn't had much to do with the arrangements, and it was all left to my mother and Doreen's parents. We had the wedding at what had been Mum's church, and following it, we had a reception in a place at the Lansdowne, which my father had organised. I will always remember that as we were going through the Lansdowne area in the wedding car, there was a policeman on point duty, do you remember them too, who stopped all the traffic to let us through, and then threw a halfpenny into the car as we went by, which I thought was a nice touch. The reception was not the exciting event that it might have been, as it was dry because my mother was strictly teetotal and wouldn't have any booze in the place, so it was a rather staid affair. We were going on a honeymoon to Torquay, and my dad had said he would give us a lift down to Templecombe, which was on the main line from London to the West Country. We got a couple of miles down the road, and I suddenly realised I'd left behind my haversack, which had some of my night kit in. So we had to go all the way back. And by that time, the party had got going at home, and there were great howls of delight when we got back, people joking that we'd been divorced already. We eventually got going again, spending the night in Exeter, travelling on to Torquay the next day. We had a very happy honeymoon, looking all around Torquay and visiting Plymouth, amongst other places. When we returned, I had to go back to Topcliffe again.
Things went fairly well at Topcliffe for a while, but then I had a letter from BOAC saying I could report for duty October the 31st at Aldermaston. As I'd applied for an extended service commission, I thought I'd better sort it out before I started, so I went to Group HQ to explain the situation. They were quite decent and offered to tear up the application for the extended service commission so I could pursue the offer with BOAC and arrange for me to be discharged prior to my going to join BOAC. I had to report to Aldermaston, which, before it became the Atomic Weapons Research Establishment, was a small aerodrome which BOAC had taken over as the training headquarters. We spent about 6 weeks on an introductory course into BOAC procedures, etc., and we also had to get a civil navigation licence. There were two parts to this. I had already qualified for a second-class warrant as a result of our work at Shawbury, but the first-class licence exam was another matter altogether. It was a very comprehensive thing, and BOAC sent us home for a few weeks to swat up for it. We were due to sit the exam in January. As it turned out, that winter of 1947 was one of the worst winters ever known, low temperatures for weeks on end, snow all over the place. Also, coming not long after the end of the war, there were fuel shortages, power cuts, no heating in many buildings, food was short and things were pretty chaotic, and the rail services, which had not really got back to pre-war levels, were further affected by the weather. The exam had to be postponed because the hall they used for the examination couldn't be heated. Eventually, we did take the exam, and fortunately I passed reasonably well, so then it was back to Aldermaston, where we did a couple of trips on Dakotas in order to get some experience in practical navigation. One was to Lisbon, I seem to remember, and one to Gibraltar.